Brian, good morning to you. Appreciate your time. We've been waiting for the announcement for some time, and a $16 million increase across the board from all levels. As chairman of Racing Victoria, how did you see the announcement yesterday, and how proud are you considering what we've been through in the past 18 months?
Yeah, good morning, Michael. Look, I obviously, how did I see the announcement? I think it's very positive and a great reward for all of our participants and our owners and everyone employed in the industry for what the efforts they've gone to over the last 15 or 16 months with COVID. To be able to reward them with that sort of prize money increase for next season is fantastic. So, and the feedback, generally across the board from many people I've spoken to and had messages from has been really positive as well.
Everyone obviously has different opinions, and it's a game of self-interest here in racing, because that's where everyone earns their living from the participant point of view. But how does Racing Victoria decide where the money gets delivered and how it is scaled?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I've sort of made this comment a few times over the last day or so, but we go through a process, obviously getting submissions from metro clubs, from country racing, from various stakeholder groups, and typically if we've worked out we can afford to spend X, the submissions come in, and if you add them all up it ends up about five or six times X. So there is a prioritisation process that we go through. It is a balancing act, looking at how we invest in everything from grassroots racing through to our feature race days. And as I say, it's a balancing act, and I think we've done a good job of that this year. There's a number of objectives we try to achieve. Clearly, what we want to do is optimise the total amount and make that as large as it can be, because we understand that how important that is for the sport. But then we look at, obviously things like field sizes, we look at wagering issues, but we also look at what we need to do to be supporting the grassroots area and making sure our feature races are attracting the right sort of fields and interest, and we've got the right prize money to be able to do that. So there's a number of factors we take into account, and hopefully what we've done this year is do a reasonable job of that.
We'll talk about some of the headlines in a moment from, as you said, all levels, from the non-tabs to country minimums up to Group 1s. But I was watching the announcement yesterday on .com with Paul Tatnall and Matty Welsh, and there was a comment you made that really struck me about the amount of prize money that has increased here in Victoria over the last 4 to 5 years. How much exactly is that?
Yeah, look, I was asked the question because there's some comparisons with increases in New South Wales, and they announced their increase a month or two ago, and it was $20 million. And of course, we get a lot of pressure to match what our colleagues north of the border are doing. So I just explained that. Look, I think looking at 1 year increases, whether it's in New South Wales or Victoria, isn't the right way to look at it. We look at it over a longer period of time, and over the last 6 years, so since 2015, we've actually had $100 million. Increase in prize money in Victoria. So we've gone from, $180 million on offer in 2015 to $280 million on offer now. That's north of 60% increase over that period of time. So I think that's a better reflection of how we're travelling. One of the other key metrics that we focus on is that sort of average prize money per race and how that's sitting. And I made the observation yesterday that with the increase that we're announcing for next year, the average prize money on offer for every race from our picnic races all the way through to our feature group ones is now north of $65,000 in Victoria. And I think that's pretty amazing.
That is amazing. They're phenomenal numbers. And what people probably lose sight of is it needs to be sustainable, because you don't want to be reducing prize money at any time. So how much of a factor has that been in the announcement of these increases, especially as we are still not over the COVID situation?
Yeah, look, everybody knows we've been in a really volatile situation, not just with wagering, I'll talk about that in a second, but also, with crowds being allowed back onto race courses and the impact that has on the financial security of our clubs. And we've been and continue to provide ongoing support for them, so that's obviously a priority as well. But with COVID, what we've seen is a lot of volatility in wagering revenue, certainly something I haven't experienced since I've been following the numbers relatively closely. Last year, up until sort of the March-April period, which was sort of 12 months after COVID began, we're tracking sort of 30% up on wagering turnover. That's come back now closer to sort of where we were pre-COVID. It's certainly still above where we were pre-COVID, so we're sort of sitting in between. But it's very volatile. So it's one of the challenges when we're sitting down thinking about, well, you know, what's the right quantum of increase here, is trying to form a view of what might happen with wagering revenue over the next year or two. And I guess in summary, our assumption is that we do land somewhere between where we were pre-COVID and where we were last year over the next couple of years. And that's what we've used to base that $16 million increase on.
Country minimums, $4 million, more than $4 million invested in country prize money. And the standard country race is increasing from 22,000 to 25,000, and maidens, importantly, are increasing 23,000 to 25,000. Now, you're never going to please everyone, and I would say that probably the only negative part I've seen on social media and in commentary is that people were hoping for a larger increase in maidens. How did you come up with the $25,000 and $2,000 increase?
Yeah, if I can correct a couple of issues there. The $4 million has gone into the minimums. The investment in country racing is actually a lot more than that when you take into account what we've done with Warrnambool and Swan Hill and Cranbourne Cup and these sort of things. So the investment in country racing prize money is actually a lot more than the $4 million. So that's just clarify that for you. The other point I'd make around the maidens, it's interesting. I understand people sort of focused on that 25,000 number, but we actually run something like it's about 1,600 or 1,700 maiden races in Victoria every year. Just under half of those are actually already run now for either $35,000 or more. So yes, we've lifted the 23 to 25 for the standard country maidens, but there are, say, almost half of the maidens that are run in this state are already run for $35,000 or more. So the average for a maiden, given we run some for 50, and now next year we'll be running some for $60,000. Will be a lot closer to that $35,000 number. But again, you know, just coming back to why didn't we increase more than the 25? As I said, it's a balancing act, and you know, there's a significant investment gone into increasing those minimums for standard country maidens, from 23 to 25, simply because of the quantum of races that we run at that level.
And I'd imagine, is that something that you will continually want to increase as each year goes by?
Look, every element we're trying to increase to get that balance right. You know, I'm just looking at some numbers I've got in front of me here now. It's interesting that the country standard minimum, you know, the 5 or 6 years ago was 15,000, so we've now gone to 25,000. Yeah. So that's a 67% increase. So again, when we look at it over that sort of sustainable period, there really has been some pretty significant increases gone into those types of races already. But we do understand the importance of those races and the thrill the owners get when they win their first race. And, you know, we'll continue to try and make them as attractive as we can with the prize money.
Metropolitan minimums have also been raised to 130,000 on Saturdays, and I know there's a lot of increases for night racing at Moonee Valley, and a lot of discussion prior to yesterday's announcement about getting differentiation between group and listed minimums, and that's what you've done. Listed minimums are up to 160,000, group 3 minimums are up to 200,000 from 160, group 2 up to 300 from 200,000, and group 1 minimums up to 750,000 from $500,000. Why was that a big focus, Brian?
Oh, look, as you said, I think it was almost, whilst we get a lot of feedback from people, and as I said, we took a lot of suggestions from various groups, it was pretty unanimous that the spread from our sort of standard Saturday races through to listed and then our other black type races had become very compressed, and it was one of the things that we were keen to get sorted this year, and I think we've done that. We've also changed the approach we're taking with the 3-year-old and stayers races on a Saturday as well. They were previously running at 135. We've brought those back to 130 as well. But the money that we've saved there, we've actually invested in about up to 10 or 12 3-year-old and stayers races only to sort of try and give those races a bit more of a focus. And we think that strategy hopefully will help those 3-year-old and staying ranks as well.
A lot of the major group ones have increased, especially the new market. I think a lot of people were crying out for the new market to increase. It's up to 1.5 million. The Toorak's gone up $500,000 to $1 million, as has the William Reid. So a bit of a focus on the sprint races and premium sprint races and the prize money there as well. And one thing that I did note yesterday, which I thought was great, was the two premium country carnivals, Swan Hill and Warrnambool, getting significant prize money increases as well. Has that allocation of prize money been determined as to what races will increase over those carnivals?
It has. I don't have it in front of me at the moment, Michael, so I won't be able to give you the detail, but I know Greg Carpenter and the team.
Well, the Warrnambool Cup's up to 300,000, yeah, and the Wonga 200.
Some of their other feature races will get a bit of an increase, but they'll also have I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this, although saying it on radio, it's a bit dangerous when I say that, but I think the minimums now at Warrnambool will go from 35 to 50. But look, I'm sure Greg Carpenter or somebody at RV can confirm that point in terms of the detail, but overall at the Warrnambool Carnival, we're injecting about $400,000 into that carnival, and at Swan Hill, the number's about $250,000. I think, you know, really great recognition for what those two clubs have done to build some really iconic country racing carnivals.
And there's more than $700,000 for jumps racing as well. So, as you said, every layer and every class has received a boost in the announcement yesterday. What's the shareholder reaction been from those that I've seen publicly? Everyone has been very positive. I haven't seen much publicly from Troa. Have you had any comment from Troa?
Yeah, I have. And look, I think very supportive, other than we have a bit of a difference of opinion about the prize money for the All-Star Mile. But other than that, many of the other ideas that were put forward by Troa, particularly around things like the black type minimums and some of the feature races, and indeed some of the grassroots racing, they'll have seen reflected in the increases. But at this point, we still have a bit of a difference of opinion about what the appropriate prize money is for the All-Star Mile. But as you know, we're reviewing. There's a review underway with the All-Star Mile, and that'll include everything from prize money through to, you know, the conditions of the race, when it's run, where it's run, all those sort of things. So I guess watch this space on that. But that's the only issue that I know Troa has a concern with.
And that $5 million, that is locked in, though, for this coming season for the All-Star Mile?
Look, as I said, the review's underway at the moment. If you ask me to tell you now, I don't think it will change. But as I said, it's all subject to review by the RV board over the next month or so. And we'll be announcing, you know, the goal is to announce any changes, if there are to be any, to the All-Star Mile before the new season starts. So, you know, in a month or so.
And as part of that review, is there on the table the possibility that it could move to before the Australian Cup, to be a feeder maybe into the Australian Cup?
All of those issues are being looked at, Michael. Yes, it's on the table. And as I say, we'll be looking to make a decision around, you know, the timing of it, when it's run, how it's run, the prize money, all those sort of things within the next month or so.
There's a couple of other issues we'll touch on, Brian, but it's a great announcement for the Victorian racing industry yesterday, and you said it is funded by, obviously, turnover, and we're in a precarious position as far as the volatility. You mentioned about COVID as well, but also we've got the licence renewal with TAB upcoming. I know there has been the announcement on the point of consumption tax as well, so looking forward to the next 12 to 24 months, are you confident that the funding levels and the turnover, the wagering levels, will be able to continue to fund these levels of prize money?
Yeah, absolutely. We wouldn't have made the announcement yesterday and sort of committed the extra $16 million. We weren't confident that it was affordable. The wagering levels over the next 1 or 2 years are probably the most difficult thing to predict. The wagering license will play out, but it's probably likely to be towards the end of that time frame. But we've got enough data now on wagering to at least have an idea of what bands it might play out between, and so we've used that to determine whether or not the $16 million is sustainable, and made the call that it absolutely is.
Let's just change tact a little bit, Brian. Got a couple of SMSs already asking, and it might be unanswerable at this point in time, but when do you think we'll get to start to see crowds back, especially in metropolitan Melbourne?
Yeah, look, I think this weekend will be problematic unless there's a an announcement made today. You know, it takes some time for the clubs to be able to plan and execute having crowds attend the races. So, you know, I suspect if there's not an announcement made today, it'll be difficult for the Melbourne Racing Club to have a crowd on Saturday. But our teams, both the clubs and Racing Victoria teams, are in very close contact with the right officials at the state government level, and we're pushing very hard to have crowds back as soon as we can. But and obviously, you know, we're looking at what's happening with the AFL and their ability to have crowds, and decisions being made around that, and pushing very hard for the racing industry to be able to have their owners and fans back on track as soon as we can. But it is, as you point out, it's a very difficult one to predict. I haven't seen today's numbers. I don't know whether you have, but it's something we're all watching pretty closely. And the last you know, 2 or 3 days in particular have been pretty promising. So hopefully by Saturday week, we've got some crowds back on metro tracks. But you know, there's a bit of water to go under the bridge before we can confirm that.
Yeah, fingers crossed. No, I don't think the numbers have come out as yet. I haven't seen them either. Just a quick one on what's one of the hot topics of the moment. I'll mention it to, we'll bring it up with Josh Blanksby, Sandown. It's been a lot of discussion, debate in recent days, and we know the development tax that was announced in the state budget. Has Racing Victoria had much involvement in any of those discussions, what that's looking like moving forward?
Are you talking about the wagering tax or Sandown more generally?
Oh, sorry, the development tax at Sandown that's been brought in, if they were to rezone the land out there.
We've been involved in the discussions that Melbourne Racing Club have been having with the state government. I think it's early days there. I heard your interview with the minister, racing minister, yesterday and his comments, and probably don't have a lot to add to that. So there are more discussions going on between Melbourne Racing Club and I think now with the Treasurer's Office to just understand the implications for them. But it's pretty important. I mean, if it was to be a number like 200 million, that's a big number, and I think would have a serious impact on, you know, the options that could be considered to stand down.
Could that have a further impact in other race clubs as well that are looking to redevelop, maybe Pakenham or Cranbourne, if those zones are changed as well?
Well, the changes have already been made there, is my understanding.
Right.
Because we're already, you know, those types of developments are already happening. So off the top of my head, I don't believe, and I've certainly not been informed that there are any other sort of serious implications for other clubs. I mean, by far and away, the biggest development option or opportunity being considered is Sandown. So that's the one we're sort of spending most of our time focusing on and trying to understand what it might mean.
And there's been a lot of talk about the end decision. How much input will Racing Victoria have over the decision to sell or redevelop or what may occur?
Look, a lot. We're working really hand in glove with the Melbourne Racing Club, both in terms of, you know, assessing options for Sandown and then understanding if there is a decision made to go ahead with a redevelopment, how the proceeds from that could be used for the betterment of the industry overall, as well as obviously the Melbourne Racing Club themselves. But it's interesting listening to a lot of the debate, and clearly, you know, I hear trainers out there advocating for keeping Sandown. To be frank, I don't understand how people can reach that conclusion without understanding what the options actually look like. So, you know, we're still working through that with the Melbourne Racing Club in terms of what would happen with any proceeds from Sandown and how that would be invested for the betterment of the industry. And, you know, I understand trainers like Sandown as a racing track, but without understanding how the proceeds may be used, whether it's, you know, additional training facilities, whether it's a new racetrack, whether it's investing in facilities for spectators and fans or whatever, and until they see that, I don't actually know how they can reach a view about, you know, we have to keep Sandown. They've only got half the story. Now, we're working with Melbourne Racing Club to develop the other half of that story, and when we've got that and we're all convinced that we've got an option which we believe is in the best interest of the industry, then we can be talking more fully about it and get on with it. But it's really still too early from my perspective for people to be sort of, you know, putting their line in the sand because they don't understand what actually will happen if and when Sandown was to close.
I think there is a lot of confusion around that, Brian, because most people have probably assumed that if the MRC sells Sandown for however much money, that it's actually the MRC's money to do with it what they want and build their new grand plan at Caulfield. But would that money or part of that go to actually Racing Victoria?
There's no doubt that part of it would be utilised for the betterment of the industry overall, and that's the issues that we're working really closely with. Melbourne Racing Club's been very supportive on that. They understand our position and the need for whatever happens here to be in the best interest of the industry overall, and we're working through that with them. And it takes some time. It's not easy. We've made some good progress. Unfortunately, this potential development tax has put a bit of a spanner in the works in the last month or so in terms of the work that we've been doing, but look, I understand we will need to be doing a lot more communicating with participants and other stakeholders about what the options look like. But I guess at this point in time, just ask for a bit of patience from people while we work through that. And if they want to form a view once they've got the whole picture, that's fine. But I just think it's too early, given the number of options that are out there and the potential, you know, way those proceeds could be used, for anybody to be forming a definitive view.
Another issue of the moment, the internationals, and Aidan O'Brien blew it up with his comments at Royal Ascot last week. Do we need, and it was good to get Grace Forbes on yesterday to clarify the situation, do we need to communicate more clearly? Has there been some confusion about what these protocols this first year will actually mean for the internationals?
I think the answer to your question is absolutely yes. We do need to do more communication, and that is planned. I think when we, you know, the quantum and the complexity around the changes that we did introduce, I think, you know, we have tried to communicate, but clearly we need to be doing more, and that's underway. I heard your interview with Grace yesterday, and, you know, she said that there are a lot more sessions planned for later this week and early next week, just to clarify any confusion about what's required, whether that can close the gap on some of the opinion differences. I guess we will see, but that's certainly what we're trying to do, because, as I said all along, we still want an international presence at the Melbourne Cup. We want the right fit horses to be able to get here. And so, you know, we'll keep working with people to try to find solutions to the concerns that they've raised. But, you know, we don't apologise for the fact that we've put the welfare of the horses and the jockeys that are riding through our spring carnival at the forefront here. And if that means we have a less of an international presence, so be it. But we don't want them to not be coming because they don't understand some of the requirements and how we'll be assessing them and so on.
There has been some talk of possible loopholes, horses coming out early that may not need to go through the rigours of the internationals if they come out on those international, I suppose, flights that head to Werribee, or even horses coming through New South Wales. Is Racing Victoria looking at those possible loopholes that have been mentioned?
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I haven't had a discussion with the team specifically about that, but I think when you start hearing people use the word loopholes to try to avoid scrutiny, it certainly raises some red flags. And, you know, I think it's an area where our team will look at and see, you know, if there are people trying to get around some of the requirements we put in place, we'll need to see what we do about it. But, you know, that, I'm sure that our team, having heard some of those comments, will be looking at are there additional changes or things we need to be doing differently to make sure that we get that objective. Michael, the one thing here is, you know, not to make it impossible for people. We want an international presence, but we want fit horses that, you know, are well enough to significantly reduce the risk of any sort of catastrophic injury, like we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. So that's the objective. And, you know, as I say, we make no apologies for pursuing that vigorously.
Two little quick ones. How is Racing Australia going with the independent chairman now, John Massari? You would have been happy, Peter Belandi said, to congratulate them. Well done on your prize money announcement yesterday. Is it thawing?
No, I think, just on the prize money thing, I think both states are doing a great job. I mean, it's interesting, that level of competition in that area, I think, is good for everybody, and you know, participants and owners and all the rest of it who are seeing, you know, a bit of a battle there. It's a good thing, but there are certainly other areas where, you know, we cooperate more, as we've spoken about at length before. But no, look, early days with John, we've had a few conversations, which I think are you know, positive. So hopefully he can help bring us all closer together and we get some great outcomes for the industry. That's what we're aiming to do, but it's going okay at this stage.
And last one, because we need to take a break into the news. Jamie Carr, she's about to become the first person, male or female, to ride 100 Metropolitan winners. Are we going to ramp up some publicity, promotion? I know Jamie's a bit shy and she doesn't want to talk to the media that much because she's so busy, but from a Racing Victoria perspective, is that an area we really need to build on?
Yeah, look, we work, obviously, the point you make, you know, we've got to allow Jamie to get on and do a job, make sure she gets to the 100. And our team's working with her management about various opportunities. There's a lot of work going in to make sure our various media partners are aware of, you know, hopefully what's about to happen. And then there's a lot of plans going into how we celebrate that when it does happen. And, you know, working with the various clubs and, again, with our media outlets about how we... if and when she gets there, and I'm, you know, you have to be pretty confident she's going to get there, particularly now she's riding in Melbourne game this weekend. How we celebrate what's a really remarkable achievement, and we need to make sure we recognise it appropriately and celebrate it appropriately.
Got some good news to end with, Brian. It's a donut day today. The numbers have come through, zero cases in Victoria. So hopefully it's another step towards crowds. Well done on the announcement yesterday. When you look at the figures, 60% increase in prize money over the last 5 or 6 years, next to $100 million. It is phenomenal the way the prize money is here in Victoria. Well done yesterday, Brian.
Cheers, Michael. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Appreciate your time, Brian Kruger. We'll talk more about it with Matty Stewart after this. Dissect it, give us your thoughts, and also Josh Blanksby and Robbie Griffiths, the boss of the Trainers Association. All that still to come on Racing Pulse.